from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper. You are Live from the Path.
And you are listening to Live from the Path, Tony from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper.
It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I worked on that. Yeah. It was...
Hold on. Can you crack this?
I don't have my... Oh, man. Always something not working quite right. I swear I can't pull it together. All right, hey,
Pathway Ghetto Studios.
It's like falling apart. Pictures are missing or whatever. All right, here's what we got going on the show. I found a couple articles. I'm not quite sure whether I'm interested in them. So the first one is the 2020's most read Bible verse found in Isaiah.
Is this a surprise?
Does anybody have a guess on what it is?
I should.
Here I am, send me.
Okay. Actually, I'm a man of unclean lips should be more popular than it is. Okay, all right. So hold on. We might as well go through this one now that I've landed on it here. Searches on the YouVersion Bible app increased by 80% this year. Oh, interesting.
Wow.
That's a significant movement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nathaniel, do you use the YouVersion?
No.
No. No. Do you use another Bible app?
Yeah.
What do you use?
I use the ESV app, and I use the Blue Letter Bible app.
Okay, so combo of stuff.
Yeah.
Dan, do you use one on the phone?
I use my Logos.
Oh, you just use the straight-up Logos stuff?
Yeah, they have that.
Even
app.
For, like, traditional Bible reading on your phone, or
yeah.
Do you not read?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you, Nathaniel, do you use it for, like, any daily Bible reading or anything on your phone?
Yeah.
Okay, you do. Dan, do you do it, or just for looking up stuff?
Both. Mostly on my phone, I guess, looking up stuff.
Okay.
I don't do a lot of... I mean, it depends if I'm, like, in a spot where I'm not doing anything. I'm like, oh, I'll just read my Bible a bit, but...
Right.
That's not...
Okay. Mike, do you have an app?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like using it, but I've started a little bit. To be honest, I like reading out of my Bible.
Paper?
I do. Yeah, I do. Yeah. But it was causing me to... If I did not have... Like, if I'd missed my time in the morning... I certainly would have time to make up for it if I used the Bible app sometime during the day, and I was refusing because I like my regular Bible, and I thought, I said, you know, that's got to go. Yeah. That's got
to
go.
I used to wear out my Bible like every couple of years or something, and then when the digital stuff started coming out, I never read a paper Bible anymore, mostly because I'm cheap.
Yeah,
I guess because they're like expensive, you know, and I wonder if that's like hurt the Bible market out there, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. Whoever makes super thin, see-through pages is like, man, we just got no business.
We used to get $80 for this thing.
Yeah, I think it's a generational thing. You know, I don't like it at all. I don't like reading anything on my phone. Really, I'd really prefer just to read off paper. But I've had it staring at me in the face, and you know, and I thought I could look at Facebook or look at the news. Or I could probably read a couple chapters of Esther.
Yeah.
So so that it is kind of helped throughout the day. It's funny, we were just talking about before the show started, is like the little bits of what you take in and what you put in your soul and what you take into, you know, to refresh yourself. You'd be amazed on the change of your thought processes and the change of your heart if you replaced, you know, 2 times a day of social media with 2 times a day of Chronicles or, you know, something.
I should really do that.
Here's the thing is the more you do that, like you don't want to be so out of it that you have no clue what's going on, but maybe you do. I mean, honestly, the things that God has for you to work on almost never have anything to do with what the news is talking about or what's going on your social media.
That's true.
And so like the things that you're, that God would have you, you know, invest in, like your family or the people around you or your work or your integrity or missionary work or whatever, none of that is dependent on how the election turned out in New Jersey or what, or that the coronavirus is spiking in Kansas. Like, I suppose these are things to know, but like, did it really make you any more wise? Did you gain anything? Did you turn that into empathy and prayer, or did you just take in information and go, well, I know that now. And then that's all the more it went, because it's just not adding to you.
Yeah.
And like, it's hard to advocate for that and go, hold yourself away and just listen to whatever God has to say, and read the Bible and pray and keep yourself concentrated on where you're at. Because it sounds very not intuitive, but like, if everybody took care of their area, we would cover all areas.
That's true.
Right.
That's one of my biggest fears in life. And it's, every once in a while, it kind of terrifies me that, what if I get toward the end? It's not a fear or a scare, but I mean, just a disappointment. What if I get toward the end of my life and think, man, I could have read so much more from the Bible.
Right. Right.
And I, you know, I'll spend an hour on the social media and not even think, I can't tell you what I read on it a week, yesterday, today.
Yeah.
Let alone, like, I could tell you if I'd read Matthew.
I mean, even when you run into a good article or something that you find interesting, I mean, it's lasting impression on you is like a day. I might even tell a couple people, and then it might last 2 days. But
I don't like this. Let's stop this show. This is stupid.
This is not be going well.
Man.
I hate it.
I realized I had done a really good job at the start of the year of just getting away from my phone, setting it down, keeping it away from me, and just not looking at it. And then over the course of this year, and some of this, like, I hate it because I'm working from home, like, my phone serves as, like, my multi-factor authentication to get into my work network. It's got to buzz me or whatever. And so, like, I have to have it to do some of the main things that I do during the day. And so I feel like it has to be constantly around me. And like over the last, you know, whatever, 6 or 7 months, like it's just piled up where suddenly I'm back into the same bad habits again. Like I always have it in my hand or it's in my back pocket. I don't sit anywhere for more than a minute without having gotten it out. I'll look at it to see like if something has come up. In fact, this is creepy. They started, there was some articles and some news things about this over the last week, but like Microsoft, if your company uses Microsoft, they're doing this thing where they're starting to track behavior of employees. And like, generally they'll tell you, look, this is try to improve efficiency and stuff. It's Big Brother-ish. It's not super comfortable. But then again, like whatever, they're paying me. I'll deal with whatever they throw out there. But like, I get this weekly thing that says, look, here's the analytics on Ben Foost this week. Hmm. And one of the things as it said is that you open 90% of your emails within 30 minutes of getting it. And they're like, this is like, once you pull your attention away from something, it takes on average 21 minutes to get it back. And so they said, if you're opening, you know, your emails within 30 minutes of getting them, think of how often you're getting pulled away from doing work and focused work, and then how long it takes to get back into doing it again. And so they were actually advocating where I'm like, hey, man, I'm quick. I'm timely. I'm answering my emails. My creepy Big Brother-ish software says, look, you're opening your emails too often.
Hmm.
They said you should just set up, you know, time every 2 hours and say, okay, check email or something like that. And so, like, I found the whole thing creepy, but then I also found the whole thing valuable. I thought, well, I mean, that's a good insight. I didn't realize I was doing that.
Yeah.
And that what you might consider a virtue keeps you actually from being productive. Yeah. Yeah, and like I actually got someone was mad. It was a family member was mad at me from yesterday because they texted me or whatever, and I didn't get back to because I'm trying not to look at my phone, and it took a number of hours before I saw it. And they were like, you know, you could at least acknowledge me or acknowledge my text. I'm like, I'm trying not to look at my phone all the time, and this felt like I was doing a disservice to someone. And I thought, boy, I kind of got to change. I got to reorient those expectations because it's not fair that someone should think that like you should have to respond to those things right away. Because it's only with the advent of modern technology has it given the right for someone to kind of bother you. And we've talked about this on the show before, that like it's the equivalent of allowing someone to put their head in your living room window and be like, Frank!
Right.
And like,
right.
Like, oh, that's totally acceptable. No, it's not. You would tell Frank he's not allowed to come to do that to your house. But like, this thing is like right in my butt cheek pocket all the time. And I'm like, yeah, you should have the right to pull me out of any conversation I'm having, probably with my, you know, immediate family at any given time. Like I would, if someone asked for advice and said, hey, my in-laws keep butting in or my family or my friends keep butting in, I'd be like, you tell them to knock it off. But I allow that very thing with my phone in my pocket. And so it was a wake-up call of I didn't realize that I'd slid right back into it. And then it was so weird. The first day after I said, look, I got to stop doing this, and I'd set my phone somewhere, I remember standing in my kitchen and going, I don't have anything to do. which is preposterous.
Yeah,
I have a million things to do. Like, literally a million. I have a million things to do. But without my phone to, like, to log the list or to look up something I was going to buy for the table I was going to build or something or other, like, it's just been the thing where everything has to route through. And I'm like, this has deceived me into thinking that I don't have anything to do. I ended up washing dishes. I'm like, I'm going to wash the dishes. Like, that's like the 500th thing on the list. But I'm like, I don't even know what to do. Anyway, but it has to be jacking with your brain. It's not right. Yeah. There's something messing me up. All right. So, 2020's most read Bible verse, do not fear.
And fear shows up again.
So, you know what's funny is that, like, on this, Christianity Today is carrying this article. And so on the left-hand side, it shows related articles. 2020's most read Bible verse, do not fear. From December 9th of last year, the Bible app's most popular verse, do not worry. 2018, do not be discouraged. YouVersion Bible app tops 3 million downloads.
Wow.
So,
discourage, worry, fear.
We have a running theme here. Now, I wonder if it's something unique about, okay, two things. One, I'm going to give you the very shallow, I can't find the right word I want to describe what I'm thinking. But, like, I do wonder if people are searching that so that they can put it on social media.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
They're looking for the snippet.
Yeah.
Do not worry. Hey, for you today, friend, do not worry.
So, actually, a friend of mine from work sent me... he sent me a meme, and here's it says the phrase "Do not be afraid" in quotes is written in the Bible 365 times. That's a daily reminder from God to live every day being fearless. He says, "You're the only one I know that can verify this."
Count them, please.
Yeah.
You got to send them each verse.
Yeah, I said I think that's probably missing some context, but possibly factually accurate.
Yeah, I mean, they're saying do not fear when, I mean, almost always when the presence of the Lord is actually there. When, like, you have a choice, you're like, I could crap my pants and this would be acceptable. That's not just an everyday wake up. You telling me that's not, let's say, Nathaniel Carson, let's say you get pulled up into the heavens, all right, and you see the seraphim with the six wings or whatever, and and you can't catch anything but God's toenails because that's what you're looking at, and there's a robe and a fire and whatever, and he's going to speak to you, and you don't think to yourself, I think crapping my pants might be a reasonable option here.
Yeah, I'm pooping my pants.
This is what I'm saying. Okay, that's what I'm saying. And then the God says, do not be afraid. You're like, well, that didn't preclude me from messing myself.
Well, every time an angel shows up, that's like the first thing they say.
Because you would.
Yeah.
You would reasonably be afraid.
You know, it's kind of funny. I've been preaching for 36 years, right? You think I especially at Christmas. I've done this 36 times. This is what, the 37th time. and this year, I'm just kind of going through the story. So I'm going through just the announcement to Zechariah and Elizabeth about John the Baptist, you know? And I thought I'd preached on that before. But I just started really looking into it, and I've never actually evidently preached on, like, the moment Gabriel shows up to him, and of course he says the do not fear thing.
Yeah.
But it's like he's in the holy place. His job is that day, that week, is doing the incense. So he's right before the veil, which is lighting the incense, the prayers of the saints are going into the Holy of Holies, right? So he's in there and he's praying for the people. They've gathered outside to hear him come out after the lighting of the incense and the prayers, and he would go out and give them the blessing of Aaron from Numbers, and he's sitting there and having, like, which is a bucket list thing in it for him.
Right.
They're saying there's like 20,000 priests at the time. So it's like you went twice a year and it's by lots. There's a good chance your lifetime you never have this job. But he has it this time. And then he's there in the holy place, and Gabriel pops up, and he's like, craps his pants. You know? I mean, he doesn't say that. But he does say, do not fear, you know, because, yeah, of course you would.
You would.
I mean, there's so many things going on right there, and an angel pops up. And it's like, yeah. So he had to be startled.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
I mean, I'm 50-50 on people. I get scared real easy.
Uh-huh.
If somebody just pops up, there's 50-50 chance I'm pooping my pants anyway. Angel or not.
I poop them sometimes. It's just kind of the deal.
Duly noted.
That's true. It doesn't tell how smoothly the angel has entered the scene.
I know. That's why I was like, did he slide through the veil? Did he just kind of materialize like a Star Trek thing? Does he just walk in?
That's
hey,
a great question.
What are you doing?
Think the Lord plays it up for dramatics?
Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Hey, when you go down there, I mean, sashay slow. Let the light just shine real bright and kind of land like you just got off the Borg. Yeah. I mean, make this a deal.
Well, that's like, I was wondering, you know, and I'm thinking through this last week of like, so all of a sudden he's in the holy place next to Zechariah. And I'm like, at first he's probably ticked off, like, hey, you can't be in here.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, you don't just walk in here.
That's yeah. True.
I mean, and he's like, whoa, it's an angel. I would it be a fly on the wall in one of these events. So, do not fear is a pretty good word.
Then the fly can't talk either. It's like, what did I do? Sorry, man. Everybody gets the same deal.
I can't shake it. What popped in my mind was the angel shows up and he looks at the mercy seat and go, seat taken. Like, I don't know if he's able to sit on it or whatever. Sorry, it had no relevance. I just couldn't let it go.
That would be, they probably wouldn't put that in there. You know, yeah, God's like, yeah. Leave this stuff out. But the angel's cracking jokes like, hey, man, you left the door unlocked again.
But see, that would have been in the Holy of Holies. So that's like one step further. So he wasn't in there.
Yeah, that's true.
He was in the holy place.
He could be pointing
through the candle,
pointing through the veil,
the table, and the incense.
Can the angels go in the Holy of Holies?
The high priest just does once a year.
But not angels. But not,
oh, I thought you meant.
I mean, can Zachary angels go in there? I mean, it's a big hairy deal.
It's not good. God, I don't think God mentions it.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, there is his presence.
A couple golden ones.
They're in his presence up in God's space.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, who knows? I would say yes. I vote yes.
Yeah, why not?
I'm going to vote yes as well.
Okay. Isaiah 41, 10, ranked as the most searched, read, and bookmarked verse on the app. So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous hand. Through every hardship, people continue to seek God and turn to the Bible for strength, peace, and hope, said YouVersion founder Bobby Grunewald. He's a little on the optimistic side, I think. While 2020 is a year so many say they'd like to forget, we see it as a year to remember how God used the Bible app to help so many people who are searching for answers. Bible searches spiked corresponding to major events, with fear becoming the app's top search term in the first few months of the year, justice in the spring, and healing trending throughout the year. The Bible Gateway site reported similar search trends. Pandemic-related verses about God taking away sickness got around 90 times more queries than average when U.S. COVID-19 lockdowns began in March. Oh, now remember that list from like 2 or 3 years ago where it separated them by country?
Oh.
I'd be curious to see the relative nature of those sickness searches in the U.S. versus, like, I don't know, everybody else. Oh, yeah, here we go. 4 key themes people turn to the Bible for. Okay, check this out. Key themes. This isn't from YouVersion. This is from Bible Gateway. Pandemic. The worldwide COVID-19 pandemic dominated global news. Key topics were disease, pestilence, and plague. Oh, no. Hmm. That doesn't feel like you're using it right. Key verses. Worship the Lord your God, and his blessing will be on your food and water. I will take away sickness from among you. Exodus 23. And nevertheless, I bring health and healing to it. I will heal my people and let me enjoy abundant peace and security. Jeremiah 33. Yeah, if they're searching for pestilence and plague, I feel like they're not using it right. I mean, I know why they would do it, but like, okay. Secondly, political. Governmental response to the pandemic, as well as the U.S. presidential election, increased interest in what the Bible says about politics. Key topics, praying for government. Okay, there's a guy trying to prove something on Facebook. Obeying government, same. Key verses, I urge then, first of all, that petitions, prayers, intercession, and thanksgiving be made for all people, for kings and all those in authority, that we may live peaceful and quiet lives and godliness and holiness. And let everyone be subject to governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God, Romans 13. So, I mean, I don't. Do you think people are searching that really because they... like, didn't know what it said? Because that seems like someone trying to prove a point to me.
Yeah, they know it. They're just trying to figure out where it's at.
Yeah. Okay, and then there's end times. Let's see here. During troubled times, people often look for signs that Christ will return. Key topics, signs of the end times, end of the world, key verses. But mark this, there will be terrible times in the last days. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, and blah, blah, blah. Let's see here. Most popular keyword searches, love, peace, hope, joy, faith. Fear is number 6.
Well, you need to pick, there's one verse covers a good chunk of that.
pray, heart, light, spirit, prayer, Holy Spirit, grace, truth, children, fear not.
Chicken? Does that say chicken?
So now, no, chicken is not on the list.
No.
Comfort, rest, mercy. Yeah, nope, nope. Most popular Bible verses in 2020 on Bible Gateway. So these aren't, so John 3:16, and then Jeremiah 29:11, I know the plans I have for you. Is CHR Corinthians or Chronicles?
Gotta be Corinthians. No one quotes Chronicles.
Yes, O-N-C-R-O-N.
Hold on.
Chronicles.
Yeah, 2 Chronicles.
Really?
Yeah. If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and will hear their land.
I love that. I mean, I got to be honest with you. I just read through both Chronicles, I don't know, maybe 2-3 weeks ago. And like, I found it so, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. You just forget God's character. Like, if you were to do a Bible overview of a guy that's been in and out of the church since I was a kid, you know, and maybe really started paying attention to him when I was like 25. It was still like this heavy-handed, justice-focused Old Testament God. And then Jesus comes along and like breaks everything and then cleans it up a little bit on his way out. And then Old Testament God seems to meld into Jesus by the time the tail end of Revelation shows up. That's what a gross generalization and not at all true of God's story, but that would be probably how I would say it from what I knew, you know. And like, if you actually read through Chronicles, I mean, what a disaster, right? Everything that happened to the nation of Israel was because God said, "I will be with you," and the nation of Israel said, "Yeah, but we're not going to be with you. We're going to do this instead." You know, and in even the more outrageous things, I think I was talking about this a couple weeks ago, but my favorite thing is it was one of the kings, right, that went into battle and had like 300 dudes against a million and like totally won, no problem, right? God had the two opposing, the army split into two factions and do a end run and then around like this, around the Israelites. The Israelites just moved and then the two factions ended up just fighting each other, lost track of what was going on, killed themselves. And like God says, I will be with you, you know. And then tail end of the chapter, the guy goes out with, he's got the leading army, he's got enough people, you know, and he didn't ask God for nothing, and they got swiftly defeated by a lesser army because they went out without God. And I thought, man, and it just went on. It's back and forth. Israel, God says, hey, if you'll listen to me, I'll be with you. And then God does amazing things, brings the whole nation to repentance. Everybody is happy and joyful, and it's great. And then that king will die, and then another one show up, and he goes, he didn't do at all what God asked him to do, and the whole thing goes in the toilet. And like from a macro view, you'd figure that maybe somebody could stand back and go, you know, I think we should stop doing the things opposite of what God has. It's ruining us. You know, and one king would figure it out and fix it, and God would go, look, as long as you want me, as long as you will humble yourself and be my kids, I'm here. And I'm a God. Well, just wait to see what I do. And still folks are like, nah, yes, it's not for me. And it takes all kinds of destruction, and people are getting washed away in the process, and you're like, holy cow, God's grace and patience are just never ending here. Never ending.
Yeah.
You know, and only when he's calling them to repentance does he allow the full, and it's not even the full weight, but a good amount of the weight fall on them. Like, I told you, if you do this, I'm going to have to get you in a place where you will listen to me. And as the spectator, the reader, you're like, no, fellas, please listen to what God's saying. And then they're like, and then we installed 75 Asherah poles. And you're like, ah, no.
No, no.
And then off they go, you know, and you're like, holy cow, this is just hard to watch, you know. And then find out when you, if you read Chronicles, all that to say, when you read Chronicles and compare it to the things that Jesus is saying, it's the same heart. It's the same thing. It's grace upon grace upon grace upon grace. And God says, look, grace has no weight without justice. And every once in a while, you're going to have to see that it gets metered out. And then Jesus shows up and goes, that's all the justice. All the justice goes on Jesus. And like, you can't understand that full weight. And that's the thing. It's like someone doing something good for you, whether you will actually understand it or not. Right? Like, do I really understand the transaction that had to happen when Jesus died, took on the full weight of God's wrath and punishment of sin? I, it's above my head. It's above my understanding, right? But the God of the universe didn't bend the rules for himself. I said, look, it's got to be paid. And so, you know, and I don't want it to fall on my kids. I'm offering them a way out. And so I guess I'm going to have to pay it. And then he does. And like, and that's why we struggle to feel the full weight of what was paid for, right? As much as I still get the feeling, especially during worship songs or when I'm praying about it, I still get like a gut feeling that I know this was a big deal. But like, if it stuck with me, my life would look totally different. And it doesn't. It fades in, it fades out. I get it. I don't get it. You know what I'm saying? Like, and the weight never stays on me, which is a gift. But like, holy cow, if you really understood what had to happen there, boy, your day-to-day would be way different. You wouldn't take two steps without, hey, what are we doing? What do you think we should do today? You paid for the day. What do you want? You know?
Yeah, actually, you've been talking about it. And so I went and started reading, I don't know if I started in Chronicles or Kings, maybe First Kings. And like, and I kind of was getting the same impression. Like, you just take it in with some fresh eyes, and like, take it in and not a Sunday school way. Like, oh, here's David and Bathsheba, and here's David and blah blah blah. And like, these, they're not microcosms. Just look at them big picture, and like, watch how often God expressed what the consequence to something was, and then relented. Like, think about it this way: the consequence, even at the very beginning. God's relationship with his people has always been one of exile and not destruction as a means to call to repentance, right? Like, Adam and Eve shouldn't have survived the very first thing that happened. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. And so the first thing, God gives them a place, and then they get exile. Same thing happens to Cain, right? You've done something wrong, and like, he deserves punishment. He deserves death. He gets exile.
Right. He's classic black hat. Classic villain, right? That shows up in this story that was already, you're like, you could kind of side a little bit with Adam and Eve. You're like, oh, I get it. Sorry you screwed up. You know what? We're coming around. And then here come Cain, and he's obviously the mustache twister of the story, you know? And yep. God's still like, exile, not destruction.
Right.
Yeah. You killed a man. You straight killed your brother. And you're like, this definitely has got to be the end of God's patience. And it's not.
Well, and like Tower of Babel, same thing. People are trying, they're actively trying to basically prove that they can act without God, or that they're going to reach God under their own human initiative. Spit in the face. What do they get? Exile. Distribution. Right? Nation of Israel, obviously, much bigger picture, provided land, screwed up. What do they get? They get exile. But like, over and over again, like, we see, you even see this in the Genesis story, where Adam and Eve, where like, the consequences of what they're doing is like, if you do this thing, you shall surely die. And we're like, well, he didn't die. And like, I think from a theological standpoint, we're like, oh, well, he meant they would eventually die. But like, I actually am not sure that he wasn't expressing that what they were owed is instant death. Mm-hmm. What they got was mercy. What they got was God not actually doing it. And think of how many times that happens with the Israelites grumbling and Moses. And yeah. God will say, look, I'm going to wipe him out. I'm going to start over with just Moses' people. And like, I think God is trying to communicate that is what is owed. That is actually the right consequence. And then Moses says, hey, can you not do that? And he relents. But like, it isn't because that wasn't the right. It wasn't just to do the thing that he did. And that happens over and over and over again where Moses petitions on the people's behalf. And like, we are made privy to what the actual just thing was, what the rightful consequence was. And so like, this picture of an Old Testament God of wrath is simply without proper, like, it's not without, it's long without yeah, context correct. At all, right? That like, the times when God acts, like, even the destruction of the Canaanites, the Amalekites, and you're like, and like, the Bible goes, hey, man, it's been 400 years, and they're sacrificing their kids to fake gods. And so, something has to be done. Or like, right. Think about the times he says, like, hey, you need to, the command is to wipe out basically everybody, including women and children, and then they actually don't do it. Like, the Israelites don't follow through, and God doesn't go through and subsequently wipe them out. Like, there's notions of mercy even in those things where we're getting pictures of what God says is just, and then you are constantly getting pictures of his mercy within those things. Because, like, if they didn't follow through and God wanted it done, he could have just done it. He could have just followed up and said, look, I said to do this, I'll do it myself. He's not above that. So, anyway, it's just, I think it's a... It's an interesting reading if you take in the full notion of what justice is and what we'd be crying out for if we were on the other side of the sword. If we were the ones being defended by the sword, this is the justice we'd be asking for. And when he doesn't do it, we're like, what kind of protector are you? Because you're not doing these things. But when that sword is pointed at you, you're like, this is so unfair. I should be given mercy. And like, to even potentially to God's shame. Like, some prophets will make this case that, God, you are being shamed. The book of Revelation makes this case, or the guys under the altar make the case, like, hey, you're being shamed. Your people are dying. Your name is being dragged through the mud. And, like, always, always, God is willing to sacrifice whatever potential dishonor to his Yahweh God name is, for the cause of mercy, for the cause of what is ultimately just in the face of repentance, but is ultimately also mercy. And so it's just interesting, if you can take it in well, the picture that you actually get of God versus the shallow representation that I think sometimes comes across.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's even true in the smaller stories, you know, the woman caught in adultery.
Yeah.
You know, he'll accept the, I mean, what she should have is to be stoned, you know, and he's
right.
Like, go on, you know, and yeah, that's a good point.
All right, well.
You know what? Do you find it starkly different? You think they're taken in differently because Jesus seems to talk in a much more philosophical way, I guess. I don't know. Like where in the Old Testament, God is answering very specific things most of the time, or calling on, you know, very specific people groups, or saying this and this specifically. Jesus is not real big on specifics, or, you know, the people are trying to trap him into saying real specific things or answering certain situations, and he tends not to do it. You know, where the God of the Old Testament is like, here's what's going to happen. Like it's more an event-driven, you know, here's the circumstances,
yes.
Here's what's going to happen, right? And so do you think that it plays off that way as you read it, more how it was written? It's not like God doesn't have the nuance, you know, to be able to have philosophical conversations, but it's way more of a chronicle, right? A fact-based, here was the conversation, here's what God said, and boom, here we go.
Some of it, I think, is the posturing of the original audience. Like, you wouldn't have to tell a Jew being retold the story in 250 BC about Adam and Eve that God had been merciful to them. Like, you wouldn't have to spell that out. They recognized what God has done, and that they deserved otherwise, and that God was merciful. Like, you could tell the whole narrative of Israel up to that point, and they recognized the points of mercy. They complained about it, but they would at least recognize it. Whereas, like, we would read it and go, yeah, okay. Like unless the narrative stops and goes, and thus you will know that God was merciful. then we'll miss it. We'll miss it. We're like, yeah, they got kicked out of the garden. I'm like, but they should have been killed. But no one brought that up. But
yeah.
It didn't take pains to point it out. Whereas Jesus is a little bit more, it's weird because he's more direct in that way, but vague, generally speaking. Like, he talks about in broader principles, but he is much more of a teacher rather than just giving you history and expecting you to digest it correctly.
So actually, I asked a couple fellas this a week or so ago, and I never got a response. But I was considering the way.
Hey, I'm here. I'm in the room. You don't have to treat me this way.
And I never got a response.
And right. Boova, you know, Boova don't respond.
He don't answer this stuff. But like, it was for some reason I couldn't shake this thought that, like, what is Jesus's personality, right? Like what is his? I don't even know how to sum that up, right? But I was thinking, like, I know it's not the same as mine.
Yeah.
You know, and so, like, are there parts of the way the gospel, you know, Jesus talks, or the way he interacts with people, is there some parts of it that, like, it's his personality, or that's God's personality, which is kind of funny sometimes and pretty straightforward and like always knows what you don't know and goes, in fact, I do know, you know, I know what you're thinking, you know, and like, and just even the way he presents information like that, like, there's just a personality style to him, you know. And I thought, what is it? There's 1,000 personality quizzes, you know. Mm-hmm. What personality style is Jesus, you know?
That's what makes it so difficult to watch in film people portray Jesus, because we all have a different slightly view.
Right.
You know, I suppose we project some of our own personality or maybe a holier version of what we think, you know, it should be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I did not answer.
I don't think there's right or wrong, but you're right. Like, if you go watch, like, old school King of Kings, it's this super serious or whatever, right? And catch any version of Chosen, you know, and like, Jesus is smiling at kids, like a warm, full of love smile, and you're like, that seems more right to me, I think. And then he's talking to somebody.
It's kind of over the top. You know,
yeah, like, I don't actually know,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
That is, and I think that's the deal, is that, like, he's, I mean, at, I say this, and then you think to yourself, as he would be, but like he's like super well-rounded, right? Like right. he's expressing various parts of the human experience, and like people will identify with different parts of those. Like, oh, the guy that made his own whip and chased people out of the temple. We're like, heck yeah, he's a brute. And then the guy's like, send the children to me, and like because we don't know people. We don't know very many people. It's a very rare person who has such like a unique blend of kind of all those things in a pretty good balance. Mm-hmm.
Right. They're angry when anger's appropriate. They're warm when warm is appropriate. They are well-rounded to the point where I think most people, they're playing a character of themselves, right? Like half the time, most actual humans have no idea what they're supposed
to
do.
We're trying to do better. Like no one has ever, like very rarely... Are we saying, this is me, I'm being myself, what I'm trying to do is be a better version of myself.
Right. This is what I want to do. I know that's probably wrong, so we should shut that down, and I will try to do this. And at that point, you're playing a part, a better version of yourself, because that's not what you wanted to do. What you wanted to do was this terrible thing, and you either let the Holy Spirit or your own brain talk yourself out of it. You know, you're like, it's not the right move. And so, right, Jesus is never doing that. He's never playing the part of Jesus. He just is, where I think most of humanity, when they say, what is your personality type, what we're talking about is, what are you trying to do on a daily basis? What are you trying? Because that's not your gut always tells you to do like this weird thing. And you're like, no, I can't do that. I have to do this thing, you know? So I don't know. I was trying to figure out did the internet do it?
I'm checking. So someone certainly has done like Jesus's Enneagram.
What's an Enneagram?
It's like there's like nine, it's a type of person you are, looking for like the motivation behind your personal actions. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. 5, 6, 7. Hold on, 9. Oh, does it say? Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay, that's what I expected. He's all of them. Yeah. Yeah. Because, like, so, like, the Enneagram, like, you can be a perfectionist, a helper, achiever, individualist, investigator, loyalist, enthusiast, challenger, or peacemaker. Yeah. And he ends up being every one of them. Okay, good. That's what I expected the outcome to be.
Well, good. Well, that's settled. What I thought was spun around in my brain for a couple of days trying to come to the bottom of something. Turns out the internet figured it out already, and I guess we're good.
Yeah, they've straightened this all out. Okay. So, are you? What's the verdict then? Like, is it to have your phone on you, so that you can pick up a Bible verse Bible reading here and there? Because you will have it on you and it's convenient. Does that outweigh the risks of otherwise being caught into the thing?
I think it depends on who you are.
What if you're Dan?
Dan.
it comes and goes. It really does. I mean, like anything else.
Yeah.
You know, in your faith, sometimes you're heavy on prayer. And then you all of a sudden say, gosh, I haven't really prayed for 2 months. And same with Bible reading. And
yeah.
Same with paying attention to your family. You know,
yeah, boy, those 1-2 months are rough, man. I just go completely off the wagon.
You know, our children are gone, right? So it's just Cheryl and I, empty nesters at home, and my wife and I. And we'll the other day I looked over, I thought we've sat here for an hour, both looking at our iPads and not saying a word.
Mm.
You know, I thought, I mean, it just wasn't anything to say. I guess they weren't upset. We weren't happy. We were just looking at our iPads, looking at all the important news out there and social media world. You know, I guess.
Yeah.
Thought, well, that's pretty pitiful. So I put my thing away and say, "Hey, how you doing?"
Actually, I found that over the last number of months, I keep my wife and I. We've gotten the kids to go to sleep or whatever. We're sitting on couches or something, and then like someone starts to fall asleep. And then someone else starts to fall asleep. And then I keep opening my eye going, hey, man, are you falling asleep? Because if you're falling asleep, let's just go fall asleep together. Let's let's go into the bed. There's no reason to sleep on this couch like a couple of dummies. Like, let's just come to agreement to fall asleep. But no one wants to go, hey, we should go to bed because it's at like 11:30. And
like you're waiting up for somebody or something.
Yeah. Like, oh, well, we don't want to waste this free time that we have without the kids. But, I mean, if we're both going to sleep, we should just go to sleep.
Yeah, maybe.
Let's do it intentionally.
I've had a consistent change over the past, it's probably been 2 months now, that like, I just hate the world. Right? I hate it. I hate
I took a turn, Mike.
So
Merry Christmas.
Here's what I guess I'm getting at is like, I try about every 3 days to read some kind of news article, and I get like a paragraph in. I'm like, this doesn't mean anything. I hate this. I know what you're trying to do. Everybody's just mad all the time, upset, complaining. This is going on, this is whatever. And I think if I know this, what will my tomorrow change? And it's nothing. It literally only adds fear and anxiety to your life. Like, this is an oversimplification, right? But if I was to walk out this door and get hit by a virus that I had no idea existed, I would prefer that than fearing a virus for months and months and months and more months. And that's just me. And like, that's not to make light of what the virus is, right? But like, I mean, honestly, we talked about this as like, you can lose 1 day to an event, or you can lose years fearing the event.
Hey, a meteor could fall out of the sky at any moment and take me out.
And
I don't worry about it.
And the thing is you're adding to that.
Yeah.
You're adding to that. You're allowing it. You're allowing all that to happen. I think you should probably keep abreast of how the virus is going. It's affecting a lot of people that you know and care about. I'm not saying that's a waste of your time. But I guess what I'm saying is like, if they're having a problem in a fancy California neighborhood with dogs overrunning the place, and I will read that. I'm like, dogs tearing up a neighborhood. Boy, that's super interesting. And then there went 3 minutes. I can't get it back. I won't change anything. I'm not on the lookout for dogs at my place. You know, I don't have plans to send them money to help with the dogs. Like, I literally will have, it's just a complete hamster wheel of wasted time. And so, like, I've tried the same thing with Facebook. I've been on it for accumulatively a half hour in 2 months, because I'll read two things and I'm like, I really don't want to waste any of my brain or emotional power on any of this. It just seems like a hamster wheel of waste to me. And like, I consider that a blessing. That was not my thought 2 months ago. I'm like, I like getting on the news sites. I like seeing what's up. I like to scroll Facebook for a long time and find out I ain't done nothing. Like, here's the 24 best actors from 1987. I'm like, no kidding, who's in there? And then I'm there I am for 10 minutes reading a stupid article I don't actually care about, you know?
Right.
And I'm like, I don't know why that change showed up. I didn't ask for it. I wasn't looking to be some kind of, you know, outside of society jerkball who hates news. But like, it lost all of its joy to me. It just feels like weight. All of it feels like weight.
I don't know. Like, I'm sure someone has done a good job thinking through this, but like, the people connections that come with our ability with our connected world seem super valuable. But like, the amount of information that we are, I don't want to say responsible for, but like, are able to carry. Like, I wonder if we were even built for it.
Mm.
Like, are we even built to be able to handle or consider all these things at once?
You think they felt the same way when the printing press showed up and local newspapers started coming out?
Probably so.
You know?
Probably so. And, you know, I wonder if there's even some relevance to that. When the Bible was first printed, or even after the Protestant Reformation, where you're like, you start putting scripture into the hands of the people, like, prior to that, you're just, like, you just got to be told. Someone will tell you. And like, they can only tell you so much at a time, and so you're only responsible for what it is they're willing to tell you in that given time. But as soon as the whole Bible is at your fingertips, and you have the ability to read and understand it, like, I mean, that's a heavy burden.
Yeah.
To be able to take that in, and I suppose like, maybe that's similar to the amount of like, not the same moral impact, but like, the amount of information that we have at our fingertips, like. When we would say the Reformation was a good thing because it allowed the every man and woman to be able to take on Scripture, but like, that means Scripture is now the responsibility of every man and woman,
right?
And that probably seems like a very big load to carry, I don't know. I feel like as soon as it came out, I would feel like I would have to read all of it. When otherwise you don't have the burden of reading all of it, because you can't have it and it's not written in a language you can do anyway. So you just take it in whatever small steps old professor or old pastor man's going to tell you. That would have felt like a crazy big burden. Maybe that's our today.
I don't know. It's once again, I think I'm getting to the age where I've tried. Now I have to try to discern between generational issues that I, you know, because I'm not the current one. You know what I'm saying? I'm the older one, you know. And so generational issues that exist and are just not my preference. And then things that are actually being harmful, you know, like.
Basically, we need a new game called Cranky or Righteous.
Ooh, yes.
Like this it. Is right up your alley, Mike.
Yes.
We need to find out, hey, this thing is going on. Are you cranky or righteous?
Yeah.
Like in and my I, day.
You know, as a pastor, that's been on the forefront of my mind since my 20s, because often the battles of the church at that time were between, you know, the older people and the younger people over styles and different things. And I always thought, okay, I just don't ever want to be that guy who is battling for this is how we did it.
Right.
When maybe there's another way to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know if you know it until you hit blindside, like, I have been fighting something that wasn't really worth fighting.
Right,
you know,
right.
So I've been consciously trying to not participate in the cranky side.
Now, has that happened to you where, like, you felt like it came to light and you thought, oh, I was on the cranky side of this thing?
I'm sure it has. I can't think of an example at the moment, but... It often is part of my thought process, though.
Yeah.
Facing challenges, facing even just, hey, what do we do next? I'm often thinking of why do I say we should do this next?
Yeah.
You know, does that speak to the current generation?
Yeah.
Or to the current culture? I mean, forget generation. The change, you know, language has changed.
Yeah.
How we communicate. And sometimes I feel a little lost in that, you know.
The thing is like, do you ever consider that the way that you deliver God's word has not changed, but the way that people take it in has? And you go, and that's how we end up following trends around, right? That's how we end up with top 10 lists and take homes, and because people won't. They won't grab the take home for themselves. Ben's right. Like any Jew would have been able to tell you that God was gracious. You know, if we don't spell it out, they'll be like, God seemed angry and kicked those people out. All he did was screw up one time. That seems like an overreaction, you know? And so I don't know. It's cranky or righteous, you know, like, is it my fault that you take everything in so shallowly, or is that generationally? Look, they're used to getting the information they want in like 0.2 seconds. And so you take any longer to get to your point, they're going to stop listening to you. Mm-hmm. So now what? Do we got to change it to drive-through church where we just kind of hit you with some quippies and out the door?
That's where I was struggling. Like, we were talking a little bit last week, and you guys don't know this because I have not released a show from last week. But, like, just talking about churches and... meeting in person, not meeting in person. And like, this is a cranky or righteous thing for me where, like, I don't know, like, I felt like, it just feels like there's something about meeting. And like, although you have Fortune 500 companies, my company completely runs on, we're Fortune 100 and completely runs on video conferences. Like, we're not allowed to travel anywhere. We've got like 5 locations. I used to travel once every 3 to 4 weeks, maybe 6 weeks. And like, I haven't gone anywhere for 8 months. And so 9 months. And so, like, it can be done, and the culture is getting used to it, but, like, I feel just Ben's personal gut intestine feeling is that there's something about meeting. I don't know if that's cranky or righteous. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's me going, like, you can't do it right unless you do it in person. Because I don't know if I believe that. Like, I think you make do. I think you do the best you can. But, like, I get cranky or righteous is if you do you move the goalpost completely, and that's where I get I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I'm worried about thinking that, like, oh, it's just how we do it, and I just think it's right because it's how we've done. I'm not sure. It doesn't feel like that, but I'm worried it is.
I've wondered, like, in the corporate world, that, like, so much working at home and everything like that, that works if you had a current environment and now suddenly you shifted to home. But what happens as there's turnover in employees, mm-hmm. and you bring a new person in, you can't get the culture on a Zoom meeting.
Right.
I don't think.
It's harder.
Yeah.
It's certainly much harder.
There's pieces you're missing. So what happens if you're all fragmented like that? At some point, you've got to get people back together to bring that culture and create that culture again.
Yeah.
I think that'll be something the corporate world will have to figure out.
And I think there's smart people who like other people and who build cultures who I think will figure out means to do that. Will it be as good as people together physically again, I don't think so. Yeah. I think you're missing something there. But and maybe it'll just bear out over time, whether it's cranky or righteous. But, like, I feel like it's righteous.
Well, and like, the way that the remote communication, like when there's a lot more stuff done through email and video and whatever, like, it really is, you do miss giving people benefit of the doubt, right? Especially email, I find to be a snaky form of conversation. I don't like it. It's not my favorite. I'd rather just talk to a guy, you know, but, like, text message can cause the same problems, right? Like, if I send an email out and it goes 4 hours by and you don't answer it, I'm like, hey, you either saw it and prioritized me pretty low, or you didn't come to work today and didn't put, like, a, hey, I'm not going to be here email on. Either way, I'm irritated with you. Like, what's going on, you know? And, like, but if the guy was in the same building, I just walk down there and go talk to him. Hey, man, I want to do this. I want to buy this. Can we get this ordered? Sure, you know? And so, like, it's that type of communication and not being together, it does breed some parts of discontent easier. I don't know whether it should or not. You know, that's probably just me being a jerk. But, like, you know, it does breed that, because you don't actually know what's going on, or and you're trying to solve a problem that should have taken, you know, a 2 second walk and a 3 second conversation, and now it's drug out over 6 hours because you can't get a guy to pick up an email.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, that is difficult.
Hey, maybe you got something, and you're like, hey, man, I don't know if this is cranky or righteous. Shoot us a phone call or a text on the complaint line. It's 515-517-0085. It's 515-517-0085. That's the Bob Eisenlauer complaint line. And again, phone call or text and say, just give us the situation and say, here's what I think. Am I being cranky or righteous? And maybe we'll take a go at it. And we'll see if we can help you out. Obviously, although our examples, we've not really solved our own problems.
No.
But I mean,
no.
I mean, obviously, you're desperate. Obviously. By the time you've submitted to the Bob Eisenhower complaint line.
That's right. We can't solve our own, but we can solve yours.
We're here for your desperation.
Because we don't have to deal with any of the consequences.
I'm trying to think if we've ever gone through an advice where we're like, we don't know. Has that happened?
No, I don't think so.
No, we had a conclusion.
Yeah. We might have cut the room in half a couple times, but not very often.
Yeah. Okay.
You ready for the advice?
No, hold on. I got one thing. We're gonna do I got a couple clean jokes.
Okay.
From jokes.christiansunite.com. A new missionary recruit went to Venezuela for the first time. He was struggling with the language and didn't understand a whole lot of what was going on. Intending to visit one of the local churches, he got lost, but eventually got back on track and found the place. Having arrived late, the church was already packed. The only pew left was the one in the front row. So as not to make a fool of himself, he decided to pick someone out of the crowd to imitate. He chose to follow the man sitting next to him on the front pew. As they sang, the man clapped his hands, so the missionary recruit clapped too. When the man stood up to pray, the missionary recruit stood up too. When the man sat down, he sat down. When the man held the cup and bread for the Lord's Supper, he held the cup and bread. During the preaching, the recruit didn't understand a thing. He just sat there and tried to look just like that man in the front pew. Then he perceived that the preacher was giving announcements. People clapped, so he looked to see if the man was clapping. He was. So the recruit clapped too. Then the preacher said some words that he didn't understand, and he saw the man next to him stand up. So he stood up too. Suddenly a hush fell over the entire congregation. A few people gasped. He looked around and saw that nobody else was standing, so he sat down. After the service ended, the preacher stood at the door shaking the hands of those who were leaving. When the missionary recruit stretched out his hand to greet the preacher said in English, "I take it you don't speak Spanish." The missionary recruit replied, "No, I don't. It's that obvious?" "Well, yes," said the preacher. "I announced that the Acosta family had a newborn baby boy, and would the proud father please stand up?" That wasn't a clean joke. It implied hanky-panky. Okay, hold on. We're going to do one more. Okay. A young boy, about 8 years old, was at the corner mom-and-pop grocery picking out a pretty good-sized box of laundry detergent. The grocer walked out and, trying to be friendly, asked the boy if he had a lot of laundry to do. "Oh, no laundry," the boy said. "I'm going to wash my dog." "But you shouldn't use this to wash your dog. It's very powerful. If you wash your dog in this, he'll get sick. In fact, it might even kill him." The boy was not to be stopped, and he carried the detergent to the counter and paid for it, even as the grocer still tried to talk him out of washing his dog. About a week later, the boy was back in the store to buy some candy. The grocer asked the boy how his dog was doing. "Oh, he died," the boy said. The grocer, trying not to be an "I told you so," said he was sorry the dog died, but added, "I tried to tell you not to use that detergent on your dog." "Well," the boy replied, "I don't think it was the detergent that killed him." "Oh, what was it then?" "I think it was the spin cycle." He put the dog in the laundry.
Now the joke itself aged itself when it talked about a box of laundry soap. That took me back. In the day, you'd buy the big old Tide or whatever boxes.
And we don't do that money. Hey,
I use boxes.
What?
Do they still do them?
Well, here's the thing. We make our own. It's a combination of borax and washing soda, both which come in boxes.
We buy we buy some kind of pod or something.
For the washing machine?
Yeah.
Is that what you use, Dan?
Yeah.
Or do you use like a liquid?
We use like the pour-in stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
So
we've the pod.
I don't know where the pod goes, right? They have a pour-in. I struggle with this with the dishwasher as well. It's like some people are like, just chuck it into the dishwasher anywhere. I'm like, but they have a special compartment to put the soap in. I want to put it in there.
Yeah.
No. You got to put it just out in the open. Otherwise, it won't, whatever. I'm like, why do I got to make this so hard? I just want to do this right, you know? So, like, every time I get the pot out, I'm like, does it go all directly in the washer to break open on its own, or do I put it in the detergent cup-a-rooney, and it disperses itself through some type of whiz-bangery? And I don't know.
What I don't like about the dishwasher pods is, you know, your hands are all wet after washing some dishes, right. And then you reach your wet mitt in there, and then it makes all the other ones wet, and then they all congeal together. Then you just have one massive pod.
No, that's true.
Yeah, you got to dry your hands.
You ever think about that, Nathaniel? Adding an extra step in there?
Yeah, amateur.
Just a thought.
How long you been struggling with this?
I never thought of that.
Well, not long. I normally don't do dishes.
I feel like you had a pretty lax high school that just kind of let people pull through classes, because this is a pretty quick problem solving, Nathaniel.
Well, I wasn't a good high school student. Let's say that.
You know,
I took Spanish 1 twice and Spanish 2 twice.
Have you ever opened your dishwasher like mid-cycle and looked at the bottom? Like where all the water has kind of pooled up after like starting to halfway rinse your dishes?
Okay.
It's disgusting.
Yeah. Oh.
I've opened it before and I said, we are a dirty people.
Where's all those people? Yeah, where's all this stuff come from?
Yeah.
So didn't look that dirty.
It was, it was disgusting. And which, I mean, it kind of makes sense. It has to go somewhere. But then I feel like the dishwasher, that's what it does. It rinses it all out and then kind of continues to cycle it all about. And I don't know. It doesn't seem productive.
I got to tell you, my dishwasher went out like 3 months ago. And I ordered one. But because of COVID, it's back ordered. So it's not, it still even haven't shipped yet.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And so we're on 3 months of hand washing dishes.
Ooh.
And boy, my family hates it. And I think it's great. Yeah. I actually don't mind hand washing dishes. Plus, I get a chance to talk to my kids.
Some of the best conversations happen when washing dishes.
I'm telling you, we spend a solid 45 minutes together, realizing that like we should have washed these 2 days ago. We can't let it get this bad,
yeah.
You know. And so like I've had a lot of really good talks with my kids washing dishes because you know what we're going to do other than that, right? If we're not washing dishes, then everybody's looking for they want to watch a movie or something. Everybody wants to sit down and do something else. And I'm like, we can all huddle together behind the hand washing because it stinks.
Yeah. Oh, that's on this thing.
So, like, it's been a blessing to me. Everybody still hates it.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't mind it at all.
Why is it such a back order? I don't get it.
Yeah.
Because the factories are on half, whatever. Getting the materials is on half. Getting them delivered is on half, you know.
Oh,
and so,
you know what? That happened to me. I put in 2 new windows in this outbuilding I have, and, like, I got them all unwrapped and, like, sitting up in the holes, and I'm like, wait a minute. There's no screens here. And so I thought they'd hose me. And so I got a hold of the Menards. And it took them like I had to get custom sizes for these windows. And normally it's like 4 weeks. And it took 12 or 14 weeks or whatever. It finally showed up. And then the screens were missing. I thought, oh, I'm just hosed here. And so I got a hold of them. And they're like, yeah, the Geldwin factory, because of COVID, they're like 3 months behind on screens.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I don't know what the screen process is that they don't have them, but they don't have them.
I mean, I think there's one whiz-bang screen man, and he's not coming in.
Yeah.
And so the whole place fell to its knees.
Yeah.
They're like, everybody's replaceable. Well, yeah, not Sean the screen guy.
Yeah.
He tears it up.
Well, that's rough.
I called Dyson today because my vacuum broke, and I wanted to get a part number from him, and they said, because of COVID, we don't have people here for you to talk to, so you got to send an email. I said, dang it.
Dang it. Yeah, see,
I mean, they're answering emails.
No, well, I was hoping to get the I mean, maybe this is just me, you know, with my entitlement and all that, wanting answers right now.
Right.
But, you know, I could not wait a day for to find what the flange part number is.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. That's the point is that, like, really what they're saying is we don't have the infrastructure to route your phone call to somebody's house. Because, I mean, if they're answering emails, they obviously have people on staff.
I guess. I don't know if they'll answer the email because I just sent it today.
Oh.
So, like, it could be months.
Yeah.
Wow.
It disgusts me.
We just got a new dishwasher like 3 months ago, probably. And this time, we intentionally, it's been like years. Everything we have is like 20 years old, you know, so they're all going out. And we thought we're going to go local, and so we just have that local service and everything. And I'm really glad I did, because last week, like all of a sudden, it stopped pumping the water out. And I thought, oh, I got a drain plugged up or something, and I'm taking stuff apart. And I'm like, no, everything's fine. Everything's good. And so I called them, and they're like, oh, yeah, those pumps are going out. We'll get you a new pump in there. So they're coming tomorrow to give me a new pump. I'm like,
oh, nice.
Wow, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
They just knew. They knew already what I was calling. Yeah,
we know what you're about.
It is so nice to know people that know something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Instead of dealing with a faceless company, you know?
Yeah.
That really is, it's huge.
So there's something go through, you know, the big box store, and it'd be like, hey, big box, they're like, yeah, we just sold it to you. We don't care, you know? And or sign up for this plan or something. Like, I don't want to do all that stuff.
Right.
But yeah, I was just, we've gotten several appliances lately from the same place, and I got one left to go. But that made me feel like, yeah, that was worth
it. Yeah, this is the right place to put your money.
I helped a local family, and they're going to help me back.
Right on.
All right, yeah, let's do some advice.
Okay, here we go. Dear Life from the Path, I am a 46-year-old woman about to be married for the second time. My fiancé lives with me and my two children from my previous marriage. Other than cooking breakfast and some quick snacks, he does not contribute to the household. My issue is I pay all the bills, and he complains about the temperature inside my home. My children and I need it to be cooler. If it's too hot, we sweat and become congested, which we hate, and it makes us irritable. I tell him to put on more clothes if he is cold, but he complains to the point that I turn off the fans and air. My question is, don't I have a right to be comfortable in the home I pay for? He doesn't pay, so he should adjust to our climate, right?
Ooh. Wait a minute. What was the introduction? What's their relationship?
46-year-old woman about to be married for the second time. Her fiancé lives with her and her two kids.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, so many layers to this. I mean, for one, you can't play the budget game, right? I mean, so if he were the breadwinner, would you have to just do everything he said?
Yeah, that's not.
You know, it's like, yeah, good. Don't play that game.
Yeah.
And that's not even addressing the spiritual issues of go ahead and get married or get him out. You know,
either one, right?
You know, maybe you're not ready for marriage. That's why this is your second one, because there's some overarching themes here that seem to be coming out of selfishness and
right
pride and
I mean, you have an us versus them mentality.
Yeah,
between like bringing a man into your home, like this is a bad idea.
Either it's all your monies as a pool, as a family, or it's not. And yeah, that's a big...
Do you know how much trouble the man would be if he was talking like this?
Yeah.
You know, I make all the money. I decide what the temperature's going to be. What? Ridiculous.
You tomorrow and say, woman, we're having chicken for dinner.
Yeah.
Because I paid for it.
That's right. And I don't like that rug. Get a new rug that
I
love.
Like we're having ham.
It's terrible. I mean, it seems like such a small issue to overreact on, but like, I don't think it's going to work.
Yeah.
It just does not have the telltale signs of a marriage that's going to work. I mean, there's divvying up your marriage responsibilities, right? And if it just so happens that one of you works and one of you stays home and one of you handles the outside, one does the inside, there's no holy or unholy way to divide that up. But when you decide that, like, because of this X responsibility or X job that you've taken within your marriage, now it allows you to control all of your marriage, then you're misunderstanding marriage. Mm-hmm. That's just not quite how that works. So, yeah, I think you should...
This is only irritating you because of selfishness. Otherwise, you guys would figure that out.
I mean, how hot is he looking forward to? Like, you get sweat and congested?
Yeah.
Like, what, is he trying yanking it to 85 in there? I mean, 74 is probably a bit steamy, but, like, does it make you sweat at 74? Yeah. There's something weird about the heating in your place. I don't think it's that bad. I mean, this guy is either sick and doesn't know it, that he's requiring the temperature to be this hot, or you guys are sick and so affected. I mean, I wish they would have included what temperature he was shooting for. He insists on 76. Okay, well, that's outrageous.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could probably swing 2 to 3 degrees either direction and just say, look, someone's going to get used to this over time.
Yeah.
Right, because you're coming from a house of which, you know, wherever he lived before in his luxury or whatever, and he loves it at 75. Like, just give him 6 months. His body will get used to it. It won't be a problem. But, like, if you're claiming sickness because he Bahama Mamas himself in there, like, you know,
I've never heard anyone claim this before. It's so hot in here, I'm getting congested.
Yeah. They're irritated with each other, and they need to separate.
Which is bad.
Yeah.
This is bad. You're
this
not
before you
yet.
Even married.
Keep it this way.
Yeah. Boy, I think... Nathaniel?
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, yeah.
Someone shows up for simple heating and cooling advice, and we're like, your marriage
Separate.
Needs to... It's yeah. done. This is not going to work.
It's over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's the thing, is it feels like we're saying, hey, you have a minor infraction, and so you should separate. But, like, the presence of this minor one... Her obvious territoryism around not only money, but like her existing family and newcomer Charlie is yeah. bad. He seems either unreasonable, if he's being described correctly, or like open to being pushed around, which is not a healthy relationship for either one of them. So I think that all culminates in not going to work out.
Yeah.
Yep.
So is her problem that she pays for everything, or that like he's trying to bump up the heat, so that's going to cost some extra dinero?
I think it's both. And so like she's just saying it in a weird way, like, yeah. look, I want this heat problem fixed. Now, if anybody was going to be able to choose the temperature, it should be the person that's paying for it. This dude is literally mooching off me.
She's bitter that he's not working.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Split. It's time to split.
Segular says, the answers to your questions are yes and yes. The questions were, he doesn't pay, so he should adjust to our climate, right?
Oh.
Yeah. She says,
Secular.
Yes and yes. And your fiance, not you, should invest in a portable heater, which may solve his problem.
He's going to bring up his own personal heater everywhere.
Yeah. This dude's going to get a propane buddy and put it on wheels and toot it about wherever he goes.
Like dragging the Eden pier upstairs every night before he goes. Like, are you not going to be in the same room with him? Like, what? Yeah. If he's always by himself, this may work.
I mean, I have a house full of ladies that get this way. Like, they think everything's freezing, you know? Yeah. And, like, I work outside most of the time, so I think it's boiling beast hot in my house, you know? It's not really. It's like, it's just what you're used to, and you know, whatever. Like, this is rarely an issue. And frankly, if this dude knew anything about ladies, you say, what temperature would you prefer? And then you just grow yourself accustomed to that. Because yeah. you'll let this go eventually. She will not.
Get a yeah. beard and a hat, man.
Yeah. This temperature is the deal. You need to love your wife this way and figure out how to keep yourself. Put some long johns on. There's all kinds of options.
This happens to me all the time. It is 30 degrees outside, 35 degrees outside. And like, it never fails that there are two windows open in my house. It could be like, I mean, you remember last year, it was last winter or whatever, and like it was below zero for like a week straight. And I would come into my kitchen and the kitchen window was open. Huh. And I'd say, what is going on in here? And like, I know exactly what's going on in here. My wife loves a fresh breeze. She wants fresh air. And she does not care how cold it gets to get that fresh air. And she doesn't even notice it. I walk in like I'm within 20 feet of this thing and I'm like, it's cold in here. Someone has left something open. I can tell. And like no one in my family notices but me. And so it took me about the first, 18 months of our marriage where I thought, it's just the cost of being married to this pretty woman. Is, you know what? She's going to have the window open at -5. Now, I haven't ceased to mention it. I'm not that mature in my marriage yet. It still comes up. But like, you know, this is how she is. She doesn't notice the cold, and she likes a fresh breeze. And like, if someone said, "Look, to spend the rest of your life with this woman, it's gonna cost you an extra $4 a month in heating, because she likes a fresh breeze at all times. Is that gonna work?" I'm like, "Heck yeah, it's gonna work."
Yeah, that's fine.
I'll find the money. I'll get a paper route. I don't care. This will be fine. So I let it go.
She says, "Incidentally, P.S. Are you absolutely sure you want to be married to this prize?" Nowhere in your letter did you say you love this person. Not once did you mention his endearing qualities. Frankly, from your description, he seems like a third child.
You seem like a child.
Good one, Ben.
I nailed it.
No, you were a child.
Is that to the lady or to secular?
Everybody.
Everybody's a child.
Secular gave bad advice. This guy seems like a lump on a stump. And this woman seems like a real something else.
Okay, we got to do this one and then we're done.
Okay.
Boy, I've only read the start, but we'll see what happens. My husband, dear Life from the Path. My husband and I are in our early 50s and married for 9 years. I hate to say this, but the way he dresses embarrasses me to tears, and it's hurting our relationship.
I love this one already.
Is it acceptable for a man to wear tights and nothing else? I'm not talking yoga pants. I mean ballerina dancer sheer tights that leave nothing to the imagination. He mainly wears them in our garage, where people who drive by can see. But lately, I've caught him standing talking to neighbors like that. Am I overreacting by telling him he can't wear things like that outside the house? If it isn't the tights, it's skin-tight biker-type shorts or shorts made from mesh material that shows it all if there's a light source behind him. We have gone rounds over this almost daily. He promises he will stop, but it's only a matter of hours before he's back in costume. Is it okay to wear things like that now? I don't see women wearing tights that show off as much as his do. I'm at the point I want to gather up all offending clothing and head to the dumpster. If you say let him wear what he wants, I will, and I will keep my eyes and mouth shut. Mortified.
I feel like we've had to address this before, but
yeah.
Old dudes are old dudes. Now but he's in his 50s.
Yeah.
He's not like, I don't know if he's earned that. If I was a friend of his, I'd say, look, you're too early.
He's got 15 years to go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You got to wait a little bit before you're allowed to do this.
Ballerina dancer sheer tights that leave nothing to the imagination.
Now here's the thing. Think of the average... This may or may not be offensive. Think of the average body of a 55-year-old man.
Nope.
Just average dude. There is nothing that isn't going to feel like that.
What?
You know what I'm saying? I don't think there's any like anything that proposes to be remotely tight is going to look like it's revealing stuff. Because he's a proportioned fella.
No.
His belly going to be hanging out. His butt cheeks are going to be hanging.
A pair of solid sweatpants solve this problem.
Right, but that's
a pair of jeans.
But I'm saying anything tight will do this. It doesn't have to be ballerina.
Oh, gotcha.
Sheer.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. He could be wearing a union suit, and it'd be like,
no.
I think there's nothing much left to the imagination.
I don't know what kind of freedom you think you need. I don't know. There's no explanation for this.
I think there's some perversion thing going on here.
I mean, you think there's a legit...
I think he's sick.
...perversion thing.
Yeah.
He's looking at his own self. It's not other people.
Oh, yeah. This is not funny. This is grody.
I think so.
Oh. Oh. Oh, my.
Well, that takes all the comedy out of it.
Yeah, ma'am, your husband is a pervert.
I think so. I mean, especially if he's talking to people.
Yeah, there's a difference between, hey, look, I just walk around in my house like this and subject my poor wife to it. Like, okay. I mean, I would just say you should have done a larger questionnaire before you tied the knot. But, like, if he's intentionally going out, when she's talked to him about it, and, like, he's obviously aware and is not embarrassed of it, and, frankly, has no concern of subjecting others to it, yeah, that's wrong.
I don't know. I've been in a lot of locker rooms, and there's definitely some older fellers who are just walking around in the buff, and
just kind of enjoy it.
Yeah, they'll strike up a conversation. And it's not like they're being weird or anything. Hey, how's things down at the plant? I heard they're getting some new fork trucks.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, how about you put some pants on?
Sure thing, Bill.
That is, you know, that is it is always striking. I think I was at the I had a membership to the Y for like a year. And boy, you ain't never met confidence that exists. I mean, like, I'm 40 years old. I still change in a corner behind a locker. I'm like, I don't know. Just kind of get in, get out. And, like, these dudes are, like, sticking a leg up on the bench and being like, how was your workout today? I'm like, whoa.
It's like the World War II dudes, it seemed like. They're probably a little younger now, but, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't.
Just like, hey, yeah.
They got nothing. They don't care. It doesn't even cross their mind.
Yeah.
Right? I don't even think they're doing it on purpose. They literally are not taking it in that this is a problem of any kind.
This is how we did it in the war. It's like, dude, that was 60 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, whichever war they were in.
Yeah.
But he, again, like, but they don't walk out of the locker room like that.
No.
Sure.
He doesn't come out BA walking around the Y.
But he's in his garage, you know.
Except for with the door open, talking to people.
Yeah,
I mean, people probably, maybe they just came up and talked to him.
No, the wife is giving the impression that no one would do such a thing.
Yeah, but also, you know, wives, you know, like to blow things up a little bit, you know.
Well,
especially when they're annoyed.
That's a risky generalization.
Sure.
I don't have that problem.
I guess.
I guess. Mm.
No. You know, wives blow things up. Am I right, boys? Am I right?
No.
Mistake.
Nope. I've never even experienced
it. I mean, I'll have like a small stain on my shirt, and my wife will be like, you can't go out with a small stain
okay,
on
that's
your
true.
Shirt. There's a huge stain.
That's true.
It's like, you know.
I continually... am lobbied with, you have a giant booger in your nose, and like, I can't find evidence of anything.
Yeah.
Okay, never mind. I'm with Nathaniel on minor incidents.
Now I have slightly embarrassed myself. I think it was today, even. Now that my children are all gone and they're married and it's just the two of us living at home, I and Cheryl goes to work early. Or
I don't like where the story's going.
Yeah. I don't feel bad about walking around the house with nothing on. If
your bingo card has in the buff, you just got
to
score.
I took a shower and I'm like, hey, the dog wants out. I'll go let the dog out. You know, I mean,
you got to open the door to the outside, Dan.
Well, no, but it's an enclosed deck. I mean, it's like no one could see me from there. But it's Christmas time, and I realized today as I was driving up that my wife has the shades, the blinds open so people can see the tree.
Yeah.
And baby, I tell you what, if it's like nighttime and the lights on, it's a clear. It's you can see
it's a right, shot.
Everything is clear as day.
Into the land of Hudson.
I'm not sure. I'm not positive.
I mean, does this mean that like you were constrained almost all your life? You really just wanted to walk around in the Buckwild.
It's my naked house. You know what was the quarterback dude?
The naked room.
Yeah, naked
the
room.
Failure like, to launch.
Oh, whole house. Yeah. Terry Bradshaw.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna have to go ahead. I'll have to find some tights now, I think.
Oh,
I am with Dan on this, by the way. Like, if I stay in a hotel room or something at work, like,
I mean, right? Because you can't
I'll
do it anywhere
else. Place
like,
in the nude. Yeah.
Who's gonna stop me?
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody's
you know, fellas, I just feel like you need more thrills in your life.
Well,
if this is the top of the list, you know, I did. I walked around in a buck wild today.
Boy,
at my own place.
Felt
people
adventures.
Only knew.
Yeah.
Looks like they do.
Yeah.
This is how Lewis and Clark felt.
Yeah. We're rewriting all the stories. You should try hang gliding or gambling. I don't know. Stab a guy. See what happens. Dude, try something different.
That's what I call it. I refer to it as hang gliding. You're welcome.
Here we go. Secular says we're done with Dan's story time hour.
Let me show you.
Oh, that's great. This is a great story.
It's seared into my memory like a bad steak. Dear, hold on. Secular says, your husband appears to be an exhibitionist who cannot control his urges.
Yeah.
Frankly, I am surprised the neighbors haven't complained after seeing him in that attire.
Mm-hmm.
Ordinarily, I would advise you to let your husband wear what he wants, but in a case like this, it might be prudent to check that the ordinances regarding indecent exposure, what they are in your community.
I don't know if that's going
to
help.
Is it okay to wear tights in the garage?
Here are the ordinances.
Here's the thing, is I would be more, like brass tacks, I'd be more upset with him that he said he was going to take care of this and he's not doing it. That you said, hey, this needs to stop, and he goes, okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's a problem.
And then he continues doing it, right? And so, you know, it might be time to say, look, gather them up and chuck them. And I'm going to watch you do it, and we're going to be done with this. I'll get you the softest pants available at the Target that don't show all of whatever you're trying to do here. But, like, this has to stop. You're embarrassing me.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and you're making healthy. It's just like,
yeah. You're making everybody else uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And you're doing better.
Yeah. So, I think that it's continuing to happen, right? I mean, we can act like he's just some kind of goofball old man. But, like, at the end of the day, everybody knows that this is a line-crossing behavior. I mean, if he wants to walk around his house that way.
Yes. I'm for it.
There's nothing you can
let's
really
go hang gliding.
Right? But as soon as it crosses the threshold, as soon as other people are assaulted with it, then it's too far and it needs to stop.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's not for other people.
Correct.
All right. You've been listening live from the path. Hey, man. Is that cranky or righteous? Let us know. 515-517-0085. How often do you go hang gliding? Go ahead and let us know. Bob Eisenhower complaint line.
You know what? Don't let us know. Nobody needs to know that.
Mike would like to know.
No.
We're just taking a quick survey.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, thanks so much for hanging out with us this week. We really do appreciate it. We're rolling towards the end of the year, and we hope to see you at here 12/7. We might see you a couple more times before the day is up.
Maybe.
Hey, in the meantime, if you listen to the podcast, if you could do us a big favor and give us a rating and maybe leave some feedback that you enjoy it or that you don't enjoy it. I don't really care. Just be honest. But, you know, get them numbers up. And that would be much appreciated. And if you're a subscriber on YouTube, I'm very sorry. I rarely get to post in the video. It takes up a lot of internet bandwidth, and it's just not happening. But I'm going to do my very best to catch you up before the end of the year if you're a YouTube watcher. So thanks for hanging in there with us. I'll try to get us caught up. We'll see you as soon as we see you. But in the meantime, be faithful to means God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live.